Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
This month, Streaming Things is brought to you by Chester Copperpot, Rabid Dog in a Barbie Car, Jose Ruben Cruz Rodriguez, Thomas Alexander, Emmy, Valerie, Stanton Valentino, Aaron Layton, Crystal Trujillo, John Collins,
Ghost,
Andrew Gray, Jen Robinson, Kate, Chloe Richardson, Kalisha Reeves, Kiki Newton, Kevin Strother, Jeanette Murphy, Casey McCain, and Enza.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things. We are beginning our coverage of The Last of Us on HBO. We just finished watching episode one. We're here today with Jimmy.
Hello.
Hello, friend. Friend of the show, Jimmy. You might recognize him from our coverage we did many moons ago on Spawn, the movie Spawn, with John Leguizamo. Was that our first?
That was our first patron episode.
Yeah.
With Spawn.
Thanks, Phil.
Yeah.
Jimmy actually is a patron.
Yeah. I think I was just canceled on accident.
Your card's been declined. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm poor. No, I changed addresses. So yeah. I had to get all that stuff changed. So.
Yeah, we're tracking your payments,
I'll
buddy.
Resubscribe.
You're behind. Yeah. No, we appreciate having you here. Jimmy is a lover of The Last of Us, as is Steve. Mm. Steve's dog, one of his dogs, is named Ellie.
Yeah.
After the character in this show, this game.
100%.
And
that's
Jimmy,
where she gets her namesake.
You've played the games several times,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, played it on every platform multiple times. Some of them I don't even remember.
So that's the background that we have. If you're new to the show, we are well known for coverage of Stranger Things. You might have stuck around for our coverage of the House of the Dragon show and the Rings of Power, perhaps. There's several of you out there. And so now we're covering The Last of Us, but that's the background that we have. All of us have played the games. I just played The Last of Us Part 1, the PS5 remake.
It literally took me like 3 years to get you to play the game.
Yeah, and Andy tried since 2013 before that. I don't do well with horror games, and it's not quite a horror game, but parts of it are scary.
A little scary boy.
And so I tried several times, but I finally made it through. Incredible game. We've all played it. Steve and Jimmy, like I said, have played it several times. So we're not going to spoil anything from future episodes of the show, though. Don't worry about that. The way that this works is each episode, as soon as we watch it, we hop on the mics and we'll recap it. We'll do a play-by-play after our overall thoughts. And then at the end, we've got several fun sections to look forward to. We've got a section that we're calling Bullets and Pills.
Pills, baby!
Thank you. Just waiting on that. So that's going to be Easter eggs, references to the game that might not be overt that we've caught and written down while watching it. We've also got our top three favorite Fireflies, which is our top three favorite moments of the episode. We'll do that around the table each time. And then
favorite
our
favorite moments to light up the dark.
That's right, baby.
Hmm.
And then our outbreak performance, which is very clever, Steve. Our favorite
breakout performance. Yeah. You have an outbreak, like a pandemic,
like a zombie thing.
Yeah, like a zombie outbreak.
I love it, baby. And that's going to be our favorite performance of the episode. That'll cap off the episode there. So look forward to these each Monday, dropping as soon as you wake up, wherever that is in the world. That's actually not true. That's not how time works. It might be in the afternoon for you.
Depending where you are in the world, it will definitely drop at a certain point.
Wake up, baby. A new streaming thing's just dropped. And that'll be every Monday after each episode. So anyway, that's the way this is going to work. Thank you, Jimmy, for joining us. Let's dive right in. I don't think we have any special news to announce or any shit like that. Do we, Steve?
No.
All right, let's dive right in. Steve, what did you think? What are your overall thoughts now that it's finally here of The Last of Us on HBO Max?
This was a really interesting watch. As someone who's played the game quite a bit, it was kind of fascinating to kind of sit there and experience almost a shot-for-shot, line-for-line delivery of certain things that happened in the game, and then a second later, a major deviation from the game. There was a little bit of whiplash going on for me as someone who literally played the beginning of the game last night. Mm-hmm. So some of the stuff was like, yeah, I just watched this.
Was your sixth playthrough?
Something like that, yeah. And then other things are like, oh, that's completely different. Don't know if I like that, but I'm on board. Overall, I thought the episode was a really, really strong start. It was very good. I can't say it wowed me to the point of like, oh my God, this is high art. This is the most incredible thing I've seen. But it was good enough to be like, okay, this is a solid adaptation so far. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited to see what they do next. And yeah, overall, very positive things about it.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm really eager to talk about the deviations and what you might not have liked or what you might have liked or not liked about that, because I have thoughts as well. Jimmy, what are your thoughts overall on the episode?
Overall, I absolutely loved it. I have to agree a lot with Steve, but I understand some of the deviations. Obviously, they couldn't flesh out a lot of the stuff in the game, the action, the playthrough. So I definitely recognized why they did that. But I absolutely loved it. The intros, all of them. All of the little tidbits from the game, like you said, there are tons and tons of little, what do they call them? Easter eggs.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of Easter eggs.
Pills, huh? Baby.
Pills, baby.
I absolutely loved it. I definitely thought I was going to see a lot more of like the clickers and the runners and all that stuff, but I understand they had to kind of flesh out the characters. So I'm excited to see what they got coming out next. So.
Yeah, they're kind of holding on to the creature design for later.
Yeah. Which I understand are practical effects. I'm pretty sure they
yeah, very little CGI is what I read. Mm-hmm. So
that's exciting.
What about you, Chris?
I loved it. I had a blast. I've been looking forward to this for a long time, like even before I played the game, just because of the way you guys talked about the game. I was so excited. Big fan of Pedro Pascal.
I love him.
Big fan of Bella Ramsey from everybody knows my Game of Thrones obsession. If you've listened to the show before.
You've answered the call, Chris.
I have. And I mean, I support House Mormont to the fullest. And you know, Craig Mazin made Chernobyl, the limited series, a few years ago.
You can listen to our coverage of that show from a couple years ago.
Did we cover that?
Did we? Chris, I'm begging you.
I blacked out.
I'm begging you to listen to the show, Chris.
So I think Chernobyl is one of the best TV shows ever made. And so Craig Mazin being involved with this, knowing that Neil Druckmann, creator of the game, was going to be so intimately involved with the show. I thought it was in HBO as a network. They don't fucking miss typically. I knew it was going to be a home run. So that's why I hurried up and played the game. If the show hadn't been made, I probably would not have finally played the game, Jimmy. Right. So anyway, all that is to say, I was very excited. It did not let me down whatsoever. I see what you're saying. I think all in all, most of my excitement from this episode comes from knowing what's coming and how good it's going to be. Because if they pulled this first section off, and they did, then what's coming is going to be a home run. Absolutely. I'm very, very happy to know that the entire story of the first game is going to be played out in this first season. And so that makes me excited for the pacing. Like, it's going to be nonstop awesomeness. Mm-hmm. There's a few huge changes, like Steve, like you said, I really liked them. And like, I can see the narrative purpose.
Oh, I don't dislike the changes. There's one in particular I'm not sure about, but I don't say I dislike
right.
it. Yeah.
Right. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but like, I remember feeling like, huh. And then thinking about it for a second, but you're right. It was kind of distracting because instead of watching the show, I'm thinking of like, what else does that? I'm like looking at the dominoes in my head for what that changes. And I'm like, okay, I get it. I see why. So I'm really excited to talk about that. But yeah, let's dive right in. We'll do the play-by-play, the recap, talk about things that stood out to us, and then we'll do our three little fun games and wrap it up so you guys can all go about your day. Because I know this is your coffee. Streaming Things is your coffee for the day. Or your cocaine, if you will.
Your cocaine?
Your cocaine.
However you get down. Your pills, baby. Get used to that a lot.
It's going to happen. Strap in. Hope you got some John Ralphio fans out there.
Probably not. Parks and Rec is better than The Office.
Amen, brother. Here, Nux.
Nux. Boom. You disagree, Jimmy?
I definitely do.
Wow. Get out. The show opens in 1968. Didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
During a classic talk show, like was it Jimmy Carson? Is that his name?
Yeah.
Sure.
Sure.
on Carson. And I was getting Jimmy Kimmel mixed up there. And
I wouldn't. I don't think this is like a Carson type show.
It's like Science Guys.
Yeah, but it's got a studio audience. It's a multi-camera. Like,
the guy's not holding tarot cards to his head. Like, what am I thinking?
It might not be.
There's a band that's like, cool, play me, Bone Daddy. Yeah. Like, there's not like a studio band that plays the.
That we saw. Here's what I really do think it is, because he kept trying to make light of what the guy was saying by cracking definitely these jokes and stuff.
Yeah. It's more of a crossfire than a like a
we can agree
show.
To disagree. We all know it was.
No, I'm 100% right in this.
It was not a Tucker Carlson. How about that? We can all agree on that.
Strange enough, Crossfire did feature Tucker Carlson.
So 1968 talk show. They're talking about pandemics. There's a Dr. Newman, and it's the guy from The Mummy.
That's I was trying to
remember. Yeah, it's the fucking. Like,
where's that guy from?
It's like her brother or whatever.
Yeah. Wow, dude. Seriously, I was in the same boat, Jimmy. I'm like, I know him. Like, I cannot place him. Thank you for doing that. You have saved me hours of sleep.
Fun fact about me: The Mummy is probably the movie I've seen more times than any other movie on the, except maybe the original Men in Black.
It's a great movie.
Because I was a child of culture. And so there's no way I was not going to recognize him. And so he starts saying, hey, it's not pandemics are what we have to worry about, but it's not bacteria or viruses. It's fungus. And everybody laughs at him because it's like a Carson type show and they make jokes about it. And then, so then he alludes to how climate change might make cause a fungus to want to adapt because they can't survive in bodies above 94 degrees. Everybody is kind of laughing at him until he goes on his tirade about how if this ever happens, there's absolutely nothing we can do to stop it. So it's setting up the sense of foreboding for what we all know is coming. Even if you haven't played the games, you know what the show is about. And then he gets awkwardly cut off and then says, we'll be back. And as a humanity, we will not. Right. So it's just again, I'm very pleased with the writing here.
Yeah, it's interesting that he brought up the real cordyceps virus and talked about the ant. That is a real thing.
Yes.
And it is
horrifying. I saw it on planet Earth.
Yeah, that's the BBC episode that Neil Druckerman and them were watching when they came up, started fleshing out the idea.
You mean this talk show was, you think?
Yeah, well, that story about the ants, them watching that. So
I originally saw it on planet Earth, and I can tell you, even narrated by David Attenborough, it is terrifying.
This ant can't control his faculties.
Exactly.
All because of a fungus, not making the ant a fungi.
David Attenborough would never go for a cheap pun like that, sir. He's Sir David Attenborough.
I've offended him. Apologies.
Our listeners across the pond are throwing their headphones down, stomping upon them, and then going to eat bangers and mash.
As you do.
So then after that scene, the score kicks up and it's the fucking theme from the game. Mm-hmm. I got goosebumps.
Yeah.
I'm bald, but the hairs stood up everywhere else. I mean, everywhere else. All the little soldiers were at attention.
Yeah, Gustavo Santio. I can't pronounce his last name.
Give it a shot. Try again.
Gustavo Santalala. No, that's not. That's 100% not it.
Mm-mm.
He is the actual original composer of the game. Is composing the show.
So wow.
It's the same exact composer.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
That would have been a bullet and pill, baby.
And just hearing the original score just kick off.
It's like an award-winning Oscar movie composer working on PlayStation game, which is absolutely crazy.
They hire the big gun. Hey, yeah. Elliot Page and Willem Dafoe were on a game at the same time.
That's true.
It was a new thing back then. I loved that theme kicked up, though. For some reason, I didn't expect that. And how would you guys think of the visuals to the credits, the opening sequence?
Oh, it's incredible. I absolutely, that's one of my favorite parts of the show, really. It's just that 30-second intro just set you up from playing the game so much. I absolutely just, like you said, it gave me
goosebumps. It was really, as a super nerd who's done this show for a while, I couldn't help but notice the similarities to the Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon intros. Mm. But I kind of liked it for that as well. I mean, the fact that it's fungus completely makes sense.
I like the fact that seeing fungus kind of grow in like a time-lapse fashion, the way that it is always kind of a neat visual in and of itself.
Yeah.
But I like the way how it kind of like, it becomes the United States. It's now it's the world. And then at the end,
silhouettes. Did I catch it at the end? It was two humans or I guess Joel and Ellie.
Yeah.
At the very end, it pops up and it's them like walking away.
I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Have you ever eaten mushrooms, Steve? Mm.
Like on pizza?
Yes. So then we cut to, it's 2003. And this is already a departure from the games, right? The original game took place in 2013. It started in this like prequel cutscene that opens the game. And
the outbreak starts out in 2013.
Yeah. And then cuts to like 2033 or mm-hmm. whatever. And so in the show, it's going to be 2003. And then once it kicks up into the present timeline, it'll be 2023, which is now. So that's an interesting change. And the only thing that would affect is some of the music that Joel and Ellie listen to on their adventures, maybe.
Oh, there's a very important song that plays in the second game that they wouldn't be able to do with this timeline, which is kind of a bummer.
Why wouldn't they? What is it?
Because that song wasn't out in 2003. It was out.
The only one I can think of is Take On Me.
It was the Radiohead song.
The Radiohead one. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're right. That song, the demo for it came out in 2013. And people were like, maybe Joel listened to the demo because the actual full song would not have even released by September.
Oh, they already had nerded out to that degree on it.
Yeah, that was a big thing when the second game
came out. In this universe, Joel writes the fucking song.
<You're> right. Apparently, I've been thinking about fiddling a song.
I'm a creep.
As I take this young girl across the country.
Widow.
Don't sing that. The Hollies will sue us.
it opens in 2003 with Joel and his daughter Sarah. We see Uncle Tommy. A lot of extra footage is the way I think of it, right? We didn't get this part in the game. In the game, it starts out kind of like right as hell breaks loose with Sarah.
It's the couch scene is where the game starts.
Yeah, birthday scene. That's right. But we get a little bit of breakfast action.
A little brekkie.
And Joel's not a good cook. Have some more eggshells before I leave, right? We get to see Uncle Tommy show up. We find out that Joel is like a concrete worker, he's like a subcontractor with his brother Tommy. I loved their interactions. I thought that it's this kind of jokey, like family, like their archetypes came through, and I really, really liked it. Is Joel's birthday. He's 36, baby. And we hear on the radio there's some unrest in Jakarta, Indonesia. And Sarah's the only person that knows where that is. And it's just a little bit of foreshadowing.
Is that a country?
What is that, a country? we meet Mr. Adler, the neighbor, and Nana outside. And again, I love this interaction between Joel and Sarah, like the type of parenting that he does. They fuck with each other, right? So it really attaches you to the characters really quickly, mm-hmm. like joking about having to hang out with the terrible neighbors. They each put each other in a pickle real quick. Like, he'll have some biscuits, and then, you know what, she'll come over later and hang out with you all night, you know? Just
he's that like kind shoving of thing. Biscuits into her mouth.
Yeah, the Nana. Yeah, that's kind of foreshadowing too.
Well, she's kind of mad at him because it's his birthday and he's taking on this job and he won't be home till 9 o'clock now.
By the way, pouring concrete from 8 a.m. till 9 p.m.
Terrible.
Terrible.
Rough.
Holy
terrible.
Shit. Joel, rough. You already know Joel's a bad motherfucker right there for doing that. If you've never done some honest labor like that.
But Sarah's also America. Got a plan because before she sneaks out to have this conversation with the neighbor, she goes in. It's her room, right? Where she opens up the cupboard and there's a watch and some money. And she picks up a pocket knife too.
Was it her room? I felt like that was his room.
I thought it was his room. Oh, that's right. Because it's his watch.
Later, yeah. And later she says she stole his money.
Yeah.
To do it. So, haha. Here, happy
what was
birthday.
The significance of the pocket watch?
You paid for your birthday present. I don't know. I haven't.
You mean the pocket knife?
Or yeah, pocket knife. I'm sorry.
I honestly thought that was going to be something later, but then another knife is way more significant. So
it might come back up.
It might. And then Tommy was in Desert Storm. I don't remember knowing that he was a veteran in the game. Is that a new thing?
No, I don't think they ever.
Because that's got to be Tommy's like truck because he's driving and it's got a Desert Storm sticker on there. So he's seen action.
It's probably just setting them up because they're both just badass dudes.
They are. Yeah. Very capable gentlemen, as we'll find out very soon.
I do like the small little nuggets of detail that kind of key you in on this is 2003 because Joel's like, hey, man, I'm on Atkins.
Yeah.
What's got Atkins? Remember two early 2000s where people were like, oh, man, you mean on that Atkins? Yeah.
When the first anti-carb propaganda was born.
And that Nokia cell phone, the brick on the table.
This is before gluten-free got big. Yeah. But as soon as Atkins came out, yeah. And then we get to see a little scene with Sarah at school, which we did not get in the games. We hear some coughing, which might be foreshadowing. I don't know if I think the virus does do that, right?
Mm-hmm. Slurred speech was one of them.
Yeah.
I saw the sign. I think coughing was.
But coughing is a good indicator, regardless of like, because, you know, we all know what a pandemic is now. So,
yes.
And this whole little sequence that where we follow Sarah around through town, there's a ton of little, you know, instances where like, oh, things are not as they seem. Kind of like when we did Shaun of the Dead, you kind of got little nuggets of, you know, news clippings and people running in the background.
It's a trope for this genre, but I love it. You got to have that stroll through town kind of, at different things.
Over.
Yeah. That's a lot of helicopters. There's an Arnold reference. Get to the chopper. Then we cut to the little shop in the city where Sarah's getting his watch fixed for his birthday. You know, he charges her $30, says he can do it real quick. The wife, co-owner of the shop, comes out, kicks Sarah out. And clearly she's very upset about what's going on around the city. Hey, you should go home, right? Panicking.
There's a bunch of moments here because you see sirens. It's a police car and then an ambulance and then the SWAT team.
Yeah.
Drives totally. By the background.
That's normal where I'm from. I didn't catch it.
So was that a deviation from the game too, the watch? So did she buy him a new watch in the game or did she fix a previous watch or do they even talk
about that? Fixed it.
She fixed it. Yeah. Okay. It's a fixed watch.
It's a fixer upper.
I love the curtains of this watch store, but I just have to throw that out.
Where it's like clock face.
She kicks Sarah out and closes the curtains and it's just like, yeah, it's a watch face. Like, I would give this store my money.
They earned it. And we go back with Sarah to the neighborhood. She goes to the neighbor's house as promised. They're very religious folk because the dog's name is Mercy. And then I forget, Sarah says something and she's like, the mom's like, they need Jesus. It's what they need. 3 nails plus 1 cross equals 4 given. that's a Christian pun I've never heard.
That's maths right there.
But I respect that. It is
Christian maths. And I'm just saying,
in the Bible.
This woman says these people need Jesus. And then she goes around and says, oh, we're not making chocolate chip cookies. We're making raisin cookies. That woman needs Jesus. Yeah. Just saying.
Steve was not happy about the raisin cookies. I am a fan of oatmeal raisin myself.
No.
Maybe not over chocolate chip, but I would actually venture to say on occasion. In fact, I would go for some oatmeal raisin right now.
Well, no, what you do is you get a raisin and then you put white chocolate chips in it and you have like a macadamia nut style cookie. Then you're okay.
That's a macadamia. There's no macadamia nuts in it though.
You put them in.
Okay.
You put them in.
Raisins are absolutely terrible.
Whatever, man. Yeah. Oatmeal raisins got that brown sugary taste. I'm a fan. I guess this is the Heath bar of this sequence of shows, and I'm the guy.
With Mrs. Adler and Chris Wright.
The old lady, Nana, is looking real fucking clickery in the background.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That was a great scene.
It was creepy.
If you weren't paying attention, you weren't catching it, but she was
because it was out of focus too, which made it worse. Like, what is going on back here?
Yeah, because Sarah's going through their DVD collection, I believe, trying to find a good.
Remember those?
Yeah, she's using these people as her Hollywood video. Another 2003 reference. She's Nana, who at this point has been comatose and like not really responsive towards anything. She's apparently deaf. That's what Connie says at some point. And then Nana starts kind of jittering about.
Animating.
She's doing the classic clicker, like really quick, snappy movements with her hands.
Not looking good.
No, not looking great. And Mercy, the dog
is suspicious. He's whining and looking at Nana like, I never liked you anyway, but goddamn, I don't like you right now. Joel comes home late. It's 10 o'clock. He was supposed to be home at 9. He forgot his own birthday cake. Sarah's upset. He does still get his present because he promises to get the cake tomorrow, and he loves the watch that he paid for. Has again more great interactions with his daughter. She immediately, well, first she says she sells drugs. That's how she got the money.
Hardcore said, drugs.
Better work than what I do.
Straight from the game too.
Yeah.
I mean, even the shot of them on the couch is exactly how it is in the game.
And the other present she got was the copy of Curtis the Viper 2 movie that she got from the, was it Adler's?
The Adler's. House, I love this scene because this just goes to show you that Joel is one of us because she gives him the DVD. And he's like, oh, this is the one with the deleted scenes. We love deleted scenes.
Steve, especially. What movie was that? Was it Evolution or something?
No, it was, oh man, I can't remember.
It's a pretty one of our more obscure movies where you were like, God, did you guys see the deleted scenes? And we were like, no. Oh, they're all. Oh, was it Mystery Men?
It was Mystery Men. Yeah.
Good deleted scenes.
Great deleted scenes. Man. Wonderful.
Check that out.
And then Sarah's passed out watching the movie, and Tommy calls from jail, another departure from the game.
So I like this departure from the game because the way the game plays out, she falls asleep on the couch and then it cuts to her waking up in bed later on, and you just don't know where Joel is, and he just shows up halfway through her neighbors attacking, and it's like, where were you? I like how the show kind of goes out of its way to be like, no, he's gone for a reason. This is why.
Plus, there's no real reason that Tommy, other than he just calls his brother immediately. We presume he's nearby. This kind of gets them all together in an organic way and also characterizes them.
And it's a good way of showing,
like, Tommy's a bar fighting fool, right?
Well, he's a bar fighting fool, but also it kind of goes into like, there's a lot of violence happening in the city because people are starting to get the virus and they're starting to get all punchy and bitey.
Tend to get punchy and bitey.
And that puts him in a prison, which assumedly all those people are going. So the two of them know shit's fucked up because they were just at the prison where all the punchy bitey people are presumably going crazy.
Travis County Jail, baby. So he puts Sarah to bed, goes to get his brother. She wakes up to choppers, booms, car alarms. Again, nothing new from where I'm from, but Sarah's upset in her neighborhood. That's not common. there's a national alert on the TV show. Mercy shows up, the dog from next door. She goes to take Mercy back to the Adler's house. The front door is open. It's looking real sus, as Gen Z would say, right?
Super sus.
Skep.
Real skep. Now, that's more like us. Like, they say sus now.
Sus.
In a big pool of blood.
Things aren't streets ahead.
No. She slips in some blood and sees Mr. Adler. He's like, help me. And then Nana's over there gnawing on the mom, probably because she hates oatmeal cookies as well.
Yeah, that's what started this whole thing.
And Nana's a runner and she's got these tentacles coming out of her mouth, which again, so one of the biggest departures from the game is that there's typically these fungal spores where people have to use gas masks. Or they'll get infected. And it really only has one major narrative purpose in the game. So it's okay. But now they've got these like tentacle
part
things.
Part one.
Mm. Yes.
There's some good narrative stuff.
Oh, that I don't know two. Yet.
Yeah.
yeah. So any hoozle.
Which is interesting. Like, I don't know. So I'm willing to give this a chance because, you know, it's different. But for me, like, spores and a fungal outbreak.
Oh, you didn't get to talk about this on our hype cast.
Yeah, spores and a fungal outbreak makes way more sense than Cthulhu-esque tentacles coming out of someone's mouth, at least
so
to me.
It actually doesn't, according to Craig Mazin. Have you seen the interview with him about it?
No.
So Craig Mazin did an interview defending this. First, the tentacles was an early concept for the video game. That's where they got that. So it was like Neil Druckmann's original concept. And I think, and I'm sure Steve would agree, that the obvious reason to get rid of the spores is that you can't have your main actors in gas masks for a predominant portion of the show. And that's just annoying from a visual perspective. So they tried to get around that. Plus, it's probably really tedious to animate, you know, all the little spore dots. But it is pretty cool. Like when you see the spores, you know, shit's going to go down. And I would have liked to have seen a gas mask, honestly, at least
there's
once.
I feel like there's some good tension you can do with a gas mask scene.
Like maybe a POV, little goggle shot, like some of the Batman action. Mm-hmm. But what Craig Mazin said was, and people got kind of, you know, all the neckbeards got really pissed immediately. Oh, now you're going to bring up science. But he's like, scientifically, it makes no sense because when you have something that's aerated like that, or, you know, it's an aerosol type pandemic, it's in the spores, everyone would be infected. He's like, within days, the entire world's done. Like, because it doesn't, in the game, it kind of stays contained in rooms and shit. And it's like, nobody really cares because it's a game. But he's like, but in actuality, the spores are going to leak through the door, under the door, out the window, anything that's not hermetically sealed.
You ever seen The Happening?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Oh, you haven't?
Actually, I've avoided a lot of M. Night.
I was going to say, like, I see where you're going with that, because you could run into the situation where a lot of The Happening was like, the wind!
Yeah. And
people are just running from the wind. It looks silly.
Yeah, exactly. Like, a strong gust blows up, and it's like,
everybody's dead.
So he wanted to avoid that, and so that's why they did the tentacles. And I understand that.
I do think the tentacles are a bit hokey, though.
We haven't seen them in action yet.
I like the little bit we did see. So I think it's going to play out. It's going to look a lot.
Yeah, like when it's going to grab a motherfucker.
I really hope the tentacle is going to come out of someone's mouth and like hook a leg.
No. I hope it just.
The tentacles coming out of her mouth was just like a hint, I think.
I thought she was like. So I think what she was doing was she was infecting the other two, but the tentacles are the transmission of the...
Because
those two got out and chased the neighbors later on and they hit them with their car.
Correct. But they are still bitey. Like, so it's a bite mechanism. Hold on. So in the game, this is the status, guys. If you've never played the game before, this is kind
status
of important.
Status update.
So when you get bit, when you're first infected...
Chris is in a relationship.
You become... Yeah, I changed my status on Facebook. It becomes a runner. Right. So this is the earliest stage of infection. You're just kind of like a Tasmanian devil at this point. And then you become a stalker, which is like a even more fucked up mushrooms start sprouting
out of your eyes.
You get kind of sneaky and jumpy and
lose
spindly.
A little bit of weight.
Yeah. That's a stalker. And then you become a clicker, which is full on mushroom head, blind.
You can't
bastard.
See.
Yeah.
So you echo locate with your clicks.
You echo locate like.
Ooh, oh my God, there's a clicker in here. Guys, be quiet.
And then there's the bloater, which is just like overgrown fungus.
You've
Stay
been
puffed
for
marshmallow
like
man, but like the fucked up version. Mm-hmm. And then the final form is you just, in the game, just a mushroom boy sprouting spores. Final form in the show, stuck to the wall, tentacles flying everywhere that grab people as you go by. That's where they'll come into play,
in
Steve.
Dead Space?
Probably.
That's
where the tentacles will come into play. Final form.
I'm not against it. I just maybe the visual of a tentacle, you know, monster sucking face with people. Like
your favorite movie of all time, The Thing.
Yeah, but The Thing is The Thing, and this is a fungal outbreak. I don't know. There's something weird about I don't know. I'm not 100% against it. I'm just kind
You're
of
not
like,
sold. I respect it.
I'm cautiously optimistic.
You're not a whore for HBO like me.
It's true. I'm not a whore.
HBO can clap my cheeks whenever upon request. I hear that static and I drop trowel.
One thing I hope they kind of dip into with the infected. And one of my favorite things about it, and this is the most horrifying thing, because the guy at the beginning of the episode, the mummy guy, he kind of talked about how it affects your brain and you're not in control of yourself. And part of the reason the runners in the games are so horrifying is because the person is still in there. Like who you are is still there. You just can't control yourself. That's why they sound like they're like mumbling because they're moving against their will. They don't want to be hurting you, but they can't control it. And to me, that makes them, that's my like most horrifying, scary version of a zombie is that where it's, you're there, the person's there, they just can't control themselves.
Where you're aware. Yeah.
It looks like they're not going to be doing that so far, at least so far in this episode, but I hope they do. Cause I still think that's way more terrifying than just, I'm a monster.
I've only
now.
Seen a couple runners and they were just making zombie.
I do have like the one runner we did see was not,
Coordinated.
Oh, yeah. He's like slamming throwing himself shit. Into yeah. things. Yeah. Like, that was cool.
The tension of it was great because it was like he was almost to Joel until he would like trip over something, you know, which is me if I was a zombie because I'm clumsy. Come here. I'm hungry. I try to trick him. I'm not a zombie.
Just kidding.
So I do think the tentacles could be cool. Like instead of I can just picture Joel and Ellie creeping into a room. And instead of him being like, oh, shit, and pulling on his mask because there's spores everywhere, I could see the tentacles kind of flailing or like slithering because he's used to them and he catches them before they go full cray. And then he has to be kind of careful and ready with like a hatchet or go a different path because they'll grab him. Right. That's just what I've read that there's like Venus flytrap features to these tentacles in that form, you know, once they're stuck to the wall and stuff. So I think that could be really cool visually and with a lot of tension. So Joel and Tommy show up as soon as Sarah runs out of the house away from Nana, the zombie. And, you know, they've obviously been through some shit already, like Steve was saying. And, you know, Tommy jumps out. He's got his what's it called? It's a rifle, but what kind? It's like a bolt action. There we go. He's got a bolt action rifle. And then Joel's carrying a wrench. And I love that
he just had his tools.
Yeah. You can tell, like, throughout this whole 10 minutes opening of the show, Joel's in charge. Like, he runs the concrete company, but he's the older brother, right? And so I love that moment where Tommy looks at Nana and he wants to shoot her because he's scared and he wants to help Sarah, but he waits for command because he's a soldier. God damn it. Mm-hmm. What are we doing, Joel?
He follows the chain of command.
That's right. What are we doing? And then what we're doing is beating this old lady with a wrench. That's what Joel answers
Keep
with.
Keep your dick beaters off my damn tools is what Joel says.
That's right. And just like the game, he drops the wrench as soon as he hits it. Right? Yeah. That's no good anymore.
It has at least two or three more hits left for sure. To get rid of that.
You don't know how many people he hit before her, though. We didn't see that.
Oh, that's true. If only he had some duct tape and scissors, he could have extended that thing's life.
He could have. Joel and Tommy, they all get in the truck. They go for a getaway, you know, and there's some cool camera views. It goes around the cabin of the vehicle there. I love this characterization of Joel where they see a family that needs help and he says, keep driving. And he's like, he got kids. They got kids, Joel. And he's like, we do too. Right. So it just shows that Joel is all he cares about is Sarah and Tommy. The rest of the world can fuck off, even though he does have a heart. Like, he cares for that family, that kid, but it's not my responsibility. He's got an ability to hyper focus on his little world of what he needs to protect and then morally excuse anything else. Cause throughout this whole sequence, he's willing to run people over, all this shit. Like, Tommy, would he just go? And I think that's super important for his character. And I love how well the scene establishes that.
It's also a pretty good way of kind of establishing something really messed up is happening because Joel and Tommy have seen something that we as the audience have not, because even in the scene, he's like, you haven't seen what I've seen.
Right.
Like, even at that point. So like, as an audience who maybe not know what's going on, you're like, oh my God, what did he see? He's abandoning that family on the street? Why?
Jimmy's farm?
Jimmy's farm's on fire.
What happened to Jimmy?
Fuck Jimmy.
Who the fuck is Jimmy?
Jimmy, how did it feel seeing your farm on fire?
Oh, it's terrible.
built that farm with your bare mitts.
Yeah, with my mitts.
So they're trying to get out of the city. The freeway is crowded. They take every which way they can. Everywhere is jammed with people trying to have the same idea. They cut through a field. The army's already moved into town trying to keep people from leaving. There's passenger jets flying low. It's an incredible sequence. People everywhere. They run into a horde when they try to cut through downtown. A jet crashes on the street, wrecks into their truck, and then the scene cuts. They wake up in the wreckage. Sarah's hurt. I think her ankle's broken. Mm-hmm. And then a police cruiser, an SUV, crashes into them and separates Tommy from Joel and Sarah. They decide to meet up at the river, but they're both born and raised here and they're country boys. They're blue collar workers. I'll meet you at the river.
I know exactly where you mean, the spot.
The river.
Where you took that girl Tiffany in eighth grade, you know, that kind of shit. Like, they've been there the whole life. And then he gets chased by a runner. Joel turns the corner in this horrible scene. It's made worse because he's carrying Sarah, right? So he's kind of defenseless. And like, there's this whole pack of runners just gnawing at people. And this one lady's like still conscious, like, and he's like, I wouldn't even help you if you were fine.
Oh man. That, that one runner that kind of like,
snaps up.
Oh, that's horrifying.
Yeah. That was so, so well done. And then he goes off. He's not coordinated though. He runs, starts chasing Joel immediately. And again, he's slowed down. He's carrying his daughter and he runs through this little store, comes out the front door, and he's saved seemingly, by a soldier who shoots the runner. And then there's a sequence where you can see that the soldier's taking orders, right? And it's like, hey, all he says is one of them's injured. He's like, and you can see, you only hear one half of the conversation. He says the ankle. So presumably the commanding officer said where, and you can see, I just love the way that this plays out. And it's just like the game, but he's like, you can hear him go, say again, like, cause the guy said, shoot him. You know what I mean? And he's
like, yeah, that final, like, yes, sir. Like that defeated, like,
taking orders, man.
I wasn't even supposed to be here today.
Yeah. And then, so he opens fire and Joel and Sarah fall down a hill, and right before he finishes Joel off, Tommy shows up with that bolt action rifle, that Winchester, and, and shoots the soldier in the head, not, and then looks over, oh my God, Sarah's been shot in their solar plexus area. I think Joel was hit, like it grazed in the side. So the soldiers, I mean, this is point blank range, fully automatic rifle. Soldier. But I mean, he didn't want to do it.
Right.
No, he, yeah.
It was subconscious.
He even like apologizes before he's about to, you know, kill Joel.
And we get this heart-wrenching scene of him trying to help his daughter. He can't pick her up. And Tommy knows the it's a lost cause because he's just standing there not helping, going, Joel, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm getting chills just thinking about it. And again, so I tried to play the game twice before I finally beat it. In 2013, again in 2020, and then finally beat it 2022. And so I got through that scene with Sarah dying in the game twice, three times altogether. And, but now I have a 5-month-old daughter. I've always had my son, you know, but just like daughter made the connection a little more stark, I think. I don't know. But watching it today, that was fucked up. Like, I just literally can't imagine, you know what I mean? I have no reference point of, and I've been through some stuff in my life, but I have no reference point. Pedro Pascal, incredible actor. And I think, that Sarah did an incredible job. What's her name?
Nico Parker.
Nico Parker was phenomenal. The scene was every bit as gut-wrenching as I feared it would be.
Yeah, I played the game like multiple times. And that scene, every time I play it, you tear up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I was really hoping that they would pull it off the way that they did. And sitting there watching it, I'm dead silent, just feeling every moment of it. It was really just shocking that they killed it.
Because the writers and Nico Parker did such a good job. Mm-hmm. Of making you attached to that character so quickly.
Oh yeah.
Making her so charismatic. And even though, you know, if you played the game, you know what's coming and you know, like, don't get attached, you know, like you can't help it.
Don't learn her name.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's why I love the game so much. It's like the amount of emotion that's put into the writing. Like, I don't think there's a game out there that had done that before. And that's why I just continually go back. Every time they remastered it, I was like, oh, I got to play it again. Play it again. Mm-hmm. I think they announced this show in like, 2018, something like that.
Yeah, this was supposed to be a movie at one point directed by Sam Raimi at one point.
Oh, I'm glad that didn't happen.
Yeah, as a Raimi fan, I'm also glad that didn't happen.
Yeah.
My boomsticks.
The show and the game do a very smart choice with this opening scene is that it's through the perspective of Sarah. Like, it's Sarah is the character you play as in the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
And then we follow Sarah during this part. So it really is effective at introducing you to who she is. And, you know, the eyes of a kid is almost a more innocent way of viewing the world falling apart.
Yeah.
And it makes it more horrifying. And also when she does die, it's just that much of a gut punch.
And the fact that it's from the government instead of one of the infected, mm-hmm. it really puts you into Joel's headspace. It makes the future darker, right? Like, because there's other enemies. In fact, in the game, one of my favorite part about the game is that the infected is the least of your worries, right? They're just kind of environmental fun, you know, for the most part, until you run into a bloater.
Watch some bloaters.
It was terrible. Anywhoozle, we cut to 20 years later, so it's 2023. There's a little boy wandering into Boston, which looks completely unchanged from how it is now.
For sure. It's
completely overgrown.
Yeah, I just set that QZ up by the Dunkin' Donuts.
Hey, that's where I growed up. My grandma, not so good, but when I parked my car.
It's like South Boston.
These infected, there's a bunch of wicked pisses, man.
Bunch of wicked pisses.
That's all the Boston we know.
Yeah.
I love Matt Damon. I love
Casey Affleck.
Yeah. Not Ben, but Casey. That's my guy.
I love Dunkin' Donuts, as mentioned.
I watch Good Will Hunting. What is it, every Tuesday?
They like hockey, too.
Yeah, hockey's cool.
Yeah, hockey.
It's wicked. So they're in Boston. That's the QZ, the quarantine zone. We see the symptoms and stages of infection poster, which is very informative to let you know. It takes about 24 hours max to go full zombie or full runner, clicker, whatever you want to call it in this case. The little boy is the POV that we get. He's got a little wound on his knee and he runs into some Fedra. That's what the police or government are known in this universe. Yeah. And the feds are taking him in. They test him. We see that they have a method for testing whether or not somebody's infected. We see the screen turn red. Red's not typically a good indicating color.
Never a good sign, for sure.
Typically not. And, you know, driving means stop.
But that Fedra officer, she has some really good bedside manners.
She does.
Like, hey, you know,
you're going to be safe. We're not going to set you on fire in a few minutes.
We're going to feed you your favorite meal. You're going to give you some toys. Do you like Beyblades? We got a whole bucket of Beyblades. Yeah.
We're going to shave this horrendous mullet.
Yeah, we're going to we got to do something about that.
And we cut to Joel and some other local citizen friends burning bodies. And then he has to be the one to take the child. Of course, we see that the kid in the previous scene did not make it.
He had a red shirt on.
Yep.
He's a red shirt.
Literal red shirt. That's right.
Yep.
Good one, Steve. That's the kind of shit I steal the next day on TikTok. You know
You're
what
welcome,
mean?
Buddy. Let me know how many mid comments you get.
I blocked almost all of those, I think. There's a new wave every few months. They're paid in ration cards. So that's the currency in this new society, right? That's how they get their deodorant, batteries for their dildos, food. What else? What else would you need?
How much would, how much would a battery for a dildo cost in ration cards?
That's two ration cards.
Oh, two?
Yeah.
That's a deal.
You really got to ration that charge. That's what you got to ration. That
battery can last at least a week. So there you go.
It depends. And maybe you're just lending it out. You know, I don't know.
that's the QZ dildo. Mary gets it on Tuesday. Craig's getting it the next day.
Oh, this thing is wicked. This thing's wicked smart, too.
Oh,
it knows the right speed.
Dunking my donut.
Get it? Butts.
He gets his ration card from the one federal guy and he asks him for more work, and
he's a working man.
He says, you know, there are two jobs open up tomorrow. There's street sweeper and then there's sewer maintenance.
Yeah.
And Joel's like, which one does it pays more? Probably the one with the shit. Like,
and Joel's just like, yep, that's good logic.
Makes sense.
I'll take that one. And we see him painting over a symbol for the fireflies, which you'll find out very soon if you haven't played the game in this episode, that the fireflies are the rebellion, essentially, like trying to reinstate democracy, whereas Fedra is kind of this fascist regime that's moved in to instill order.
But an interesting thing in this world is that Fedra sucks, right?
Correct.
But the fireflies aren't angels either. They just happen to have more things aligned with the protagonists of the game, but in the world of Last of Us, the fireflies aren't
they're the bad
amazing
guys.
Yeah,
well, I like it. Yeah, it's very fleshed out, but I think that's pretty what you would expect in the sense too.
Oh, like, yeah, that's why I love it.
This is the Andor, right? Instead of like the rebellion in the original trilogy, like this is Andor. Like, ooh, they murder people, they steal shit.
Can Aunt Petunia call Fedra these bastards?
Yeah, I hope so.
Oh, that'll get me right in
where's
my
where's Cassian Andor.
I was in Chernobyl.
We need a Skarsgård to show up in this. We see the firefly symbol getting painted over, and then a public execution for this is just people that have left the quarantine zone. So they charged them with that. That's a charge, and then they charged them with returning. Did you notice that?
Yeah,
which is so copy to just be like, you're like, the first one is punishable by death. We went ahead and slapped you with this one.
If we could hang you twice, we would.
We're going to hang you two times.
By your feet when you're dead. And chuck rocks at you. Little mullet boys all around here loves throwing stuff at you. They're from Boston.
You know you're in a bad apocalyptic scenario when they're like, you know what? People seem to be acting up in this quarantine zone. You know what'll curb that? Public executions.
That's true, though. I mean, this is the kind of lawlessness we can't abide this. What, going outside, coming back in? Come on now. If you got the nerve to go outside, don't be coming back, which actually is fair. That's a fair stance because they don't want to spread infection in the QZ.
Think about your fellow Bostonian, all right?
Yeah.
We've all shared the dildo. We are in this together.
I'll tell you why we have this rule, 3.427, cannot leave the QZ. We used to have two QZ dildos till Frank left with one of them.
And he lost it. And then he had the gall to come back and say so. Fuck him.
Yeah, now you can go fuck yourself. Oh, wait, you can't, Frank. Sorry. And we've lost all seven of the new listeners.
How did we get on such a big dildo track?
Now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. You know, times are tough. We just got through COVID. right? Everybody's been stuck in their homes for years. We're readdressing life itself. We don't know what's going on. We know that we need to get to the gym. I know I do. I know I need to eat healthy. I got to take vitamins. I got to take minerals. I got to go get a physical every 6 months or so. Sometimes I do it every 2 or 3 years just to see what'll happen. But I know that I need to do it. But it's easy to sweep mental health under the rug. It's the only illness that tells you that you don't have it. And it's really difficult to start looking into. You know, you got to drive. Where do you find a therapist? Is there a therapist store? I don't know of one, but there is an app called BetterHelp that'll help link you with a therapist to suit all of your needs. You can shop through hundreds, nay, thousands of different therapists and find one that helps you get through the day, that helps you address the problems that you're having. And if at any time you feel like they're not, you can easily switch therapists or stop at any time. Mental health has never been easier to access than it is with BetterHelp. Our own host, Steve, has been using it ever since we started being sponsored by BetterHelp. And he says that it has helped him immensely. So when you want to be a better problem solver, therapy can get you there. Visit BetterHelp.com/streamingthings today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/streamingthings. So yeah, Joel's counting ration cards, and from the crooked guard, he kind of meets eyes with him during the execution.
Lee,
that's his name. There you go, Steve. I actually never caught that. And then he's selling him pills. Hydro. That's hydrocodone. That's Vicodin. Mm. And so
they didn't have any oxy.
Nah, he definitely asked for that first.
Oxy? Nah, hydro.
And then he's like, you got any mushrooms? And they shoots him because that's not something you want to say in today's society. Sells him some Vicodin for some ration cards. And then he warns him to stay off the streets tonight because we've had a lot of firefly attacks. Accidents happen in the dark. We cut to Tess. That's
a messed up thing to say.
It's very true, though, right? He's just looking out for him. I'll probably shoot you. I'm not going to lie. I'm not even going to ask.
I'm just going to do it. I see a figure in the dark. I just shoot. Shoot first, ask questions later.
Usually it's other soldiers. That's why they station us so far apart.
Right.
Tess is being interrogated by Robert. And this is where I suspect, Steve, you were iffy about changes from the game, or is this not it?
Oh, no. I was the thing I was most iffy about was the tentacle thing.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. So Tess is being
interrogated. Robert doesn't really play that huge of a role in the game. So like,
no, but it's hugely different. So in the show, she was buying a battery. This is actually the whole setup of it, I think, is superior to the game. So she was buying a battery, from Robert, and it was for Joel, cause Joel and Tess are a team and I guess a couple. He wants to go find his brother, Tommy, but none of the trucks in the area have batteries, which is also from the game, but from a different section of the game. You remember that part with Bill?
Yeah.
And so that's the whole plot of this. Whereas in the game, Tess and Joel were just buying guns and
they're gun runners. Yeah. Smugglers. Yeah.
And that's what was sold to the Fireflies. That's how they get wrapped up with Robert and they go to ask Robert where their fucking guns are. And then the whole thing with Ellie is just kind of accidental, which it is in the show too. But then running into Tommy way later in the game is just completely accidental. He's hardly ever brought up, right? He's just elsewhere in the country.
Right.
And so I think
I love how they give him motivation.
Yeah, it's so much more narrative sense that he's seeking Tommy. And that's why they would run into Tommy.
Across the country.
Yeah, exactly. So I loved that. The whole battery thing makes sense. I really like that chance. But so anyway, she's talking to Robert. She tricks Robert into letting her go, saying, because Robert's terrified of Joel. Again, characterizing Joel, his reputation for how he is. And you see why very soon. hey, I'm not going to tell Joel exactly what happened. It's going to be fine. So it characterizes Tess too. Like she's very savvy and like getting out of this situation. I'm outmanned right now. But as soon as they agree to pretty much let her go, a car bomb goes off outside. Again, more Firefly terrorism on the perspective of the Fedra. And then there's Fireflies shooting at Fedra outside. The Fedra end up arresting Tess. She's screaming, I'm not a Firefly, but they're going to go find out for sure real quick. How? I don't know. And then we cut to Ellie chained up in a Firefly hideout. And one of the Fireflies, I guess, is doing this every day to see when she's going to turn into an infected as part of this process, making sure she's still human. Hey, what's your name? She calls herself Veronica. Count to 10 real slow. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Fuck you. And I think Bella Ramsey crushed it. Like the essence of what Ellie is, the smart assness, motherfuckers, you know, just I was so gushingly happy.
Yeah, before she even said a word, she kicked that that tray over, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That right there was just, it's like, okay, she got it right.
Yeah. Yeah. She's crushing it.
And then we cut back to Joel, who's cutting a line, to the radio guy. And this is more added stuff in the show. He pays him the ciggies that he also got from
wrapped
Lee.
In foil.
Yeah. And foil ciggies, baby.
Make them better?
No, it's just, they don't have any.
They don't have any packs.
Oh, they're okay. Hand rolled. I'm guessing like just tobacco.
Looked like it. There was cotton.
Cause otherwise it'd be a 20-year-old manufactured dry ass cigarette. Yeah. So they're hand rolled.
Some guys just breaking up. Old butts. Yeah.
Rolling re-rolling like prison.
Yeah.
So he's been trying to reach Tommy. Tommy was supposed to check in. I didn't catch where Tommy went, if they even said.
Wyoming?
Well, that's where he is, but like why? I didn't catch any of that.
Oh, they did. I don't think they said why.
Like, did he sneak out or is he, you know, I'm guessing so.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I don't know. I don't think in the show we know yet, but I know why game-wise.
Yeah. Right. And then Tommy's been missing for 3 weeks. He usually checks back in every day. He says he should be in Wyoming Tower, the Cody Tower in Wyoming. And then he's going to go with him.
I'm sure he's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, there are slavers and raiders out there, but I'm sure
I love that exchange. He's like, I'm sure he's fine. Relax, Joel. And then Joel's like, I'm going to go after him. And he's like, you can't go out there. There's raiders, slavers, bunch worse than infected. And he's like, so Tommy's fine. And he's like, oh, damn, you caught me. Tommy's definitely not fine.
I'm going to smoke this cigarette.
Yeah. Next. So Joel cuts to Joel back home. He starts drinking. He plays a drinking game from what I could surmise. He looks at his map. And every time he gets to a city, he recognizes, maybe it's the one he's been to. He takes a shot and a Vicodin.
And he, I like the idea of he just like oh, game. I've heard of Indianapolis.
He starts lying to himself. Szechuan, been there.
Yeah. I just want more of this booze.
So then he drinks, pops about, looks to me, about 30 milligrams of Vicodin and drinks about 3 double shots of whiskey.
I assume he's like tracking out a path to where
Tommy
is, and he's just getting more and more depressed about
how
hard that would be to get to him. So he's just going to, I'm just going to drink this out.
Yeah. And then he gets woken by Tess a little bit. She cuddles him at night and then they wake again to her like making breakfast. She tells Joel the truth, which at first I thought she lied to him. I don't know about you guys, but that was like an interesting twist for me because she says I got jumped by 2 teenagers, which is what Robert told her to tell him, right? Or what she told Robert she would say. And I was like, damn, she's really going to lie to him? Because in the game, they go get Robert immediately. I'm confused. Yeah, in the game,
Tess is like hardcore, like, let's fuck up Robert.
Yeah, fuck Robert.
That guy.
He goes by Bob. Hate that.
In the game, they never allude to the fact that they were a couple either. They made it
That's pretty, what I said, it, I yeah. guess. Because they do. I don't remember any romanticism.
At least they used to have some sort of fling going on, but not as close as the show made him seem to be.
There's this very specific point, but I can't really say it without being spoilery.
Okay.
So, and then also, in the original concept, Tess was supposed to be the antagonist of the entire game.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Which is interesting to think about.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
It's so interesting that she started off that way and ends up how she ends up.
Well, She wakes him up and immediately does tell him the truth. It's like, yeah, they were teenagers. That worked for Robert. And it was just like a, subversion there, I think.
And then she said a line that I really, really felt. And that was, these fucking 19-year-olds.
Born after the
outbreak.
God, they suck.
These fucking 19-year-olds.
yeah, they're real sus. Got them. They're very mid.
yeah, how messed up would that be if, like, you have these adults who literally have not grown up around society?
Yeah, it's been
like,
20 years.
She's like, they never knew how to argue, so they just go straight to punching. And that's kind of like, it blows my mind nowadays where it's like, wow, there are adults now who did not know what the world was pre-9/11. Like, that's kind of like, that blows my mind.
Same amount of time.
Imagine living in the apocalypse. You're like, you don't remember cafes?
Yeah, we're old enough now where people will literally say, this is a real thing that happens. You were born in the 1900s? And that's like, technically, yes. God damn it. What? Yeah. You know? So yeah, she says, Robert's scared to death of you. Give him a real, you know, let's go beat the shit out of him, but do it carefully, right? Get him. Don't come out of here all, what'd she say? John Wayne or something like that?
Clint Eastwood.
Yeah. Different guy.
I like when she's like, I told him you weren't going to hurt him, but I want you to hurt him.
And so Joel grabs his gun out of his little hidey hole and they go out. And we cut to, we see Marlene. We get a bunch of Firefly exposition, who the Fireflies are, what they stand for, which is reinstating democracy by their perspective. From their perspective, that's what they're about. And everybody's confused why she's got the girl and why they saved the girl. She does seem to tell her buddy why.
Kim, I think her is her name.
Good catch, Steve. And hey, we're trying to take the girl out west to another Firefly, hideout or whatever. And she says, okay. But she's like, but don't tell anybody else.
A rebellion after 20 years. I do like that line.
That's right.
Because Kim is like, we're the rebellion. We're fighting against Fedra. And she's like, we've been losing for 20 years.
Yeah.
We're not a rebellion. We suck.
We're not Fireflies. We're just flies.
Of all the animals in the pantheon of the animal kingdom, we chose a bug as our mascot.
Because it brings the light, my guy, in the dark.
A bug out against jackbooted thugs to stomp us with their boots.
With light.
Follow the light.
Speaking of which, there's a Firefly recruiter outside. We cut to Joel just kind of waiting while Tess is doing some haggling, wheeling and dealing. And he comes up and they have this little catchphrase. I forget what it is. Whenever there's darkness, it's kind of like a Batman
head
thing.
Head for the light.
And he's like, if you tell me to head for the light, I'm going to beat the fuck out of you. And,
I'm going to break your jaw.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, okay. And that's gives you, again, how Joel is around the neighborhood, right?
And he does not like the Fireflies. He has a good reason to not like the Fireflies.
Does not like the Fireflies. So then they go back, cut back to Ellie. She's hilariously trying to bust out of her cage, right? She's just yanking at the chain, you know, being super Ellie-like. God damn it, this and that. Marlene throws her backpack, her knife. She's got a little switchblade and tells him, hey, I'm the one told him not to shoot you. Relax. I know your name's not Veronica. And we find out Marlene is the one that dropped her off. So there's a little backstory for Ellie. She grew up in an orphanage, which is also a training camp for kids to become Fedra when they get older. We mentioned a girl named Riley that may or may not come up later. We find out her real name is Ellie, and she knows that, right? So did I miss anything from that little combo there?
I think you got it, but my guy.
And they hint at a couple things, like, when's it going to happen? But they're very vague. And Marlene's like, it's not. And Ellie looks really happy about that. We cut back to Tess and Joel. There's a mushroom wall looking boy, which is real scary looking. At first, Tess gets scared, but it seems to be an inactive, tentacle-less mushroom wall boy.
Clicker growing into the wall.
Without tentacli. Mm-hmm.
And then Joel smells gunpowder, which is a very country thing to do. I love that. And you smell that? And she's like, I farted. And she's like, no.
It's not gunpowder.
And then
we're in a tight crawl space test. Don't do that. That's not cool.
Oh, not
put
again.
Your mask on.
Spores.
And then they see blood dripping out from under the door. Again, another departure from the game, because in this sequence, it's the first time you really get to use your guns in the game and you get to kill all 16 of those people. And then Robert
smarter.
But in the show,
people.
He walks in and they're just like, oh,
everybody's dead.
Yeah.
This was an odd choice. This is my least favorite part of the episode, was the transition between, you know, we see Marlene and Ellie and they have that conversation like, oh, we're going to do this thing tonight. We're going to leave. And then immediately they find the dead bodies and Marlene's like, I've been shot. Like, and Ellie tries to get Joel. It was very like, wait, hold on. Do we actually skip forward 5 minutes? Like, did we miss something? Am I the only one that was kind of thrown off by that?
No, I mean, because in the game, you don't know why Marlene was shot either. She just shows up wounded and presumably doing Firefly stuff elsewhere in the city. Got shot.
There were like explosions in the background that you see. They're like, man, the family's trying to get them Firefly.
And it's just as sudden because she's like, except it, there's less of a transaction here because I don't really know what Tess, oh, they get the truck out of it.
Yeah, okay. Tess is trying to get the battery from Robert.
So they're, we'll give you a working truck.
They can also leave, yeah.
So instead of getting your guns back, it's you can have the truck that you're looking for. So it works. I kind of wish we would have seen some of the shootout.
Yeah.
And we could have seen Marlene get shot.
I would have liked to have had that because I think the flow of the episode is kind of, it kind of hits a big speed bump in this particular transition.
Well, that's the scene in the game also tells you what kind of people they are. Obviously, you just killed a bunch of people, but when Tess finds Robert, when you guys finally catch up to Robert in the game and she just puts one in his head and then they walk away. And then that's when Marlene comes around and she's been shot.
Mm-hmm. Like, so I needed him.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. It lets the game player know, like, okay, these guys have no problem.
I tell you
what, so far, Tess is very hard. Like she is a very cutthroat. She's almost running Joel. Like Joel works for Tess.
Yeah.
In the game.
And that's what she tells Robert in the show. She does. But we don't see that.
Yeah. But that doesn't quite get translated as
much. Kind of. Because she kind of, I wouldn't say seduces him, but she's like, you know, I told him you weren't going to hurt him, but I want you to hurt him. Like, she is still running all this.
Well, when she's held captured, she tells Robert, like, he works for me. I control him.
Yeah. But I mean, the way they interact.
I agree. She's not.
Is nowhere near as much as in the game.
Agreed.
Which isn't a bad thing, but.
Agreed. He's kind of this dog on a leash in the game in the beginning. And she's like, sick 'em, boy.
Sick 'em.
So what I love about this scene though, Steve, I think it is kind of a speed bump, but this is where we get Ellie saves it for me. It's such a shining moment when she jumps out and tries to stab him, he throws her against the wall. She's like, motherfucker. And like, it's, I was, again, I'm almost emotional right now about how Ellie that is and how much I loved it. There's a small moment too, because if you've played the game and you know how Tess and Joel are, even though the show doesn't do the best job of showing that they'll fucking kill you, you know?
Yeah.
I love the moment. If you know that about them, when Marlene says, with something like, with the things that you guys can do, I'm sure Ellie will be okay. And Ellie goes, what can they do?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's just so cool to know that.
Yeah.
And like, just the interaction between her and Joel in the scene is really, really funny, where he puts his foot on her knife and he like kicks it away from her.
Yeah, there's
her
that
he's,
like,
he's just being like really like this dumb kid.
Playful animosity like that in the games for a while too. So I loved all that. And so we get that whole scene. I think that saved it for me. Kid Marlene's wounded. And so, and then the no ear joke. You ain't got no fucking ear.
Yeah, you know? Like, you can't do it. You don't have a fucking ear.
I don't trust you at all. And she knows, like, this is a long, dangerous journey. And she knows that Joel and Tess are capable, maybe, of making it with Ellie alive.
But
she says, don't fuck this up, please.
That Joel's animosity towards the Fireflies presumably is because they are instrumental in turning Tommy against him. Because
Tommy's pro Firefly, right?
Or at least he was a Firefly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, he specifically points out to Marlene is like, you drove Tommy away from me or turned my own brother against me.
Yep. That's why I got to go look for him in Wyoming. I fucking hate Wyoming.
Fucking Cody Tower.
Let me ask you this, Marlene. Do you know anybody who actually lives in Wyoming? Does that state even exist?
Is that weird to you? It's weird to me.
It's weird to me.
And now we come back to Ellie in Joel's house. She reads this smuggling code. We find out how smart she is. He takes a power nap because he's a fucking professional and everybody needs one when you get time. She says your watch is broken, which is funny. That's the watch he was wearing as a gift from Sarah. And then when he wakes up, she tricks him and breaks the code because she lies and says, hey, a song came on while you were sleeping. He's like, what was it? And she's like, shh. What was it?
Wake Me Up Before You Go by Wham.
Yeah. Something about Wake Me Up Before You Go. And he's like, she's like, 80s is trouble. I knew it. Because that was the only thing on his little code sheet that wasn't explicitly just stated.
Had an X.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's cool. She liked the 180s song she knew.
Chick's diggers were like Wham.
Yeah. And so that's pretty cool. Then they sneak outside. We hear what. A really stupid rap that the Fedras are apparently, it's one of their chants. We fight infection and insurrection. And then we get erections doing that. And we take protection when we have sex. I made the last part up. I'm not going to lie.
I think I missed all that.
My complexion is perfect.
But it was kind of funny, like insurrection and infection. Like,
yeah. But that's the kind of thing, Jimmy, you were in the military.
I was.
They liked little short rhyming things, definitely, the heuristics, right?
Definitely, yeah.
Improvise, adapt, and overcome. Yeah, snafu, it doesn't rhyme.
Foo bar.
What's that?
Snafu is situation normal, all fucked up.
Wait, so it's not normal?
LMAO.
Yeah, right. It's not normal. It's bad.
Situation normal, all fucked up.
Yeah, situation normal. All fucked up.
I don't get it. If it's not.
That's the military.
If it's all fucked up, why'd you put up normal
beyond
in?
All recognition.
So FUBAR is worse than snafu?
I don't know. They never told us that. They just said it.
We got to get more clear military. But anyway, they sneak up. I love this moment. Ellie's amazed to be outside. She's never been outside the quarantine zone walls. And like, so there's like guard towers with searchlights and shit. Obviously, they got to be quiet. First thing she does is stand straight up. Wow, it's amazing.
I'm outside.
I love Tess. It's like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Like Andy would have died laughing at that scene. That's totally his type of humor. They end up crawling through a pipe. They get caught by the Vicodin soldier because he's pissing on a wall and they don't take the moment to run.
He's literally caught with his pants down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you ever, yeah, he's on a bunch of Vicodin, like just taking forever to get that pee out.
Forever to get his pants up too. They could have just ran away. Like,
hey, hold up there. They were really nice for not running. And so they get them all on their knees and he starts doing an infection test on everybody. And Ellie gets nervous because we find out in a second she's infected. Right. But she's been bit 3 weeks ago. And we saw on the poster at the beginning, 24 hours. And I'm just explaining this for people that didn't play the games. On the poster, after 24 hours, everyone, 100% of people that have been infected are supposed to be like full on clickers. So this was, this is crazy news. So this is what it is. She seems to be immune to the fungus. And that's why she's so important. So Ellie panics. And even though Joel's in the process of working out a deal with Lee, like, hey, I'm going to give you free pills and all the whatever we get from this run.
Half off. I'm getting all off.
Yeah, baby. Ellie stabs him in the leg with her switchblade because she knows that she's not going to survive the next few seconds after he tests her.
He'll kill her.
And then Joel doesn't even really like the kid yet, but he stands in front of her and he gets, I love the way that they did this. He gets a flashback. I think in the game, Tess just shoots him in the head. Like, fuck it.
In the game, this soldier has like no real, there's not a lot going on with these kids. There's two soldiers actually.
No. Yeah. There's no like prior.
This is much more dramatic in the show.
Correct.
This moment.
Correct. But I think it is Tess that starts it. Like Ellie does panic.
Ellie
like
stabs
that.
Him. Yeah. And then Tess obliterates one of them. And I think Joel has to shoot the other one. Right. It's like real quick. They just, I guess we're killing him. Bam, bam.
Yeah.
We're killers. But in this, but in the show version, Joel's trying to like, hey, I know this guy. I send him pills.
It's Lee, man.
That's a revenue stream for me. I don't want this to go.
But I love that they gave this flashback to the soldier that shot Sarah. And he loses his fucking mind and beats his brains in.
Mm-hmm.
And Ellie, it's a weird moment with Ellie where she kind of like leans in, right? Yeah, was that crazy?
I love that too.
She leaned over like kind of interested, you know?
Yeah, I obviously played both games. They're going to play out on the rage factor inside of Ellie. Like she doesn't know, you know, her family. So she gets, I think she's really enthralled by what Joel can do. And she's like, wow, that's pretty cool.
He's got a particular, he's got a particular set of skills.
Yeah.
Hi, Joel. My name's Ellie. Big fan. Big fan of your work.
Yeah. I would like to kill. I also would like to learn how to play guitar.
Do you have a Patreon?
More 80s music. Yeah. What tier do I? Anyway.
Five rations.
You're getting awful punchy. Are you sure you're not infected? And then we cut back to Joel's house after they kind of head off into the city, and it cuts back and forth to the wide shot of downtown Boston, overgrown and shit. But the radio in Joel's house, his smuggler's radio goes off, and 80s music plays. It's a Depeche Mode song, and it is indicative of trouble. Now, who would have called that? I guess his smuggler buddies. I guess right.
As Bill. Bill and Frank, because when she's looking at the paperwork, she asks,
it says
Bill
BF?
And Frank.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see that.
I didn't either. Yeah. I saw BF, I thought, but I didn't hear her say who's Bill and Frank. Awesome. That's fucking cool, man.
Mm-hmm.
So any hoozle, the next, that's it. That's the end of the recap, baby.
Yeah. That's a really cool shot of the two buildings in the city leaning against each other.
Like Idiocracy.
Welcome to Costco. Yeah. I love you.
Yeah.
Should we do fireflies or bullets and pills, baby, first?
Let's do Fireflies first.
Okay. So our top three favorite moments of the episode, our top three Fireflies. Steve, why don't you start us off with number three?
My number three moment was the first time we see Ellie, where she's chained against the wall. She's kicking the bowl and she's just being incredibly sarcastic to the medic that's asking her questions. It was just such a really good, like, I knew Bella Ramsey was going to be awesome in this role. The moment they announced her, I was like, yes, that's perfect. But just kind of seeing her just in action for the first time was very like, yes, I cannot wait for the rest of the show to see her play the character more and more. So that's my number three.
Mr. Jimmy. Forgot your name.
I think probably the intro. We're going backwards, right?
Yeah, so it'd be 3, 2, 1.
Yeah, the intro to the show. I think that was probably...
All the theme music and all that? Yeah, that's good.
That was
good
pull. It was really cool. Just the whole thing was really badass.
My number three is the outro, so that's fair. Just the way that they set it up, the payoff of, you know, his smuggling code, because it characterizes Ellie. It tells you backstory for Joel's life, but then to have it, and that's all I needed it to be. Like, hey, she's really smart. That's the kind of stuff he usually gets up to. That's all I needed that scene to be in there for. But to end the episode, as soon as the radio kicked on, I was like, it's going to be 80s music and it's going to be the end of the episode because that's a fucking badass way to end the episode. Ooh, trouble. What's trouble? Right here in River City. Oh, my God. That's a Music Man reference, you bastards. And
didn't get it.
It starts with T and that rhymes with P and that stands for pole. You never watched Music Man?
No.
Anyway. I just thought that was.
Can you sing the rest of that song for me, please?
Yeah, we got trouble. I just thought that was a great way to end the episode. Steve, you're number two.
My number two is Joel and Ellie meeting for the first time, where she jumps out of the room with her knife and she's like, motherfucker. And like, he slams her against the door and just that whole interaction throughout that whole entire scene. It warmed the cockles of my heart.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed their interplay and just how, like, what did you call it earlier? Playful antagonism.
Yeah. Antagonistic.
I loved it. They already have so much chemistry and they've barely shared a screen together.
Have you seen them in interviews and like on red carpets? I mean, they seem very close. I mean, Pedro Pascal seems like a lovely person and Bella Ramsey's super cool. She tweeted the other day, her only tweet, the only thing it said was motherfuckers and hashtag The Last of Us.
It was a photo of her.
Them, yeah.
Yeah, her and him.
On the red carpet. But I was like, this is the best tweet I've ever seen. Because if you've played the game, you know that that's a reference to the character. But if you hadn't, you probably just thought she was crazy.
She's being a badass. Motherfuckers.
It's Jimmy, what was your number two?
The second runner we see, the guy in the alley that just pops up out of nowhere. Everybody else is dead. Lifeless, and then that one guy just shoots up out of nowhere.
It reminded me of my dog. You know what I mean? And that's what makes it so scary. Ball? Like this animal. Squirrel.
Yeah, that whole interaction where he's just throwing himself across tables and running into walls, like it pulled straight from the game because those are it's intense.
That's it's a great terrifying. Part
of the game. Super intense.
My number two is the intro of Ellie. That first when she's chained, I could have easily chosen the scene with Marlene as well because both versions of Ellie were just immaculately executed. It was so fucking cool. But just like you said, like I was 98% sure Bella Ramsey was going to embody this character that we all love. But just seeing it in that instant and just realizing that it was 100% confirmed to be a fucking amazing 9 weeks of my life. That was just made me so happy.
So there are 9 episodes?
Yes.
Okay. I couldn't remember if it was 10 or 8.
They had said different things over the past year. So you can't be faulted. Steve, what is your favorite moment?
My favorite moment is just the entire virus outbreak in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like they did such a good job portraying that. And I love the small changes they made. That we didn't talk about it. There's a moment. So the car flipping over and them getting hurt and starting off on foot, the inciting incident for that is they go through an intersection and a car hits them.
Right.
And they tease that in the show where it's like, oh, the car, but then the car stops. Like, oh,
yeah.
Was it like a piece of the plane that,
It was like the landing gear or something, I think.
And I like the idea, the visual of the plane crashing is so powerful. And,
It's like all hell breaking loose.
Yeah. And so everything from the moment where they're driving around like, oh, don't pick those people up. Oh, there's Jimmy's farm is on fire. they're in the city, drive over the people, run them over. And like all that stuff is so perfect. And then for it to really, they really nail the tone of Sarah unfortunately dying.
Yeah.
And that was such a sad moment and a sad scene. And you really, it was just perfect. I love that. So
that's much. Definitely up there for me. 'Cause that entire scene is verbatim from the game. They almost just pulled the dialogue straight off, even to the point where
when they're in the truck
as Sarah and you finally get control of the camera and you're looking around and she's doing that and the camera's spinning around and looking at the farm and looking at the people on the road. So that was super dope.
One thing that we also gloss over was when they get into the car and his one neighbor's like, "What's going on?" He's like, "Get in your car or get in your house, lock the doors." And they pull away. And at that point, the Adlers, who are now infected, they like run, they like hit them with their car as they drive away. And those neighbors that he just yelled at were like, "Jesus Christ, Joel." And they run into the street to presumably help the Adlers and probably get killed.
Yeah.
Which that was an addition that I was like, oh man, that's just,
I didn't even catch that they ran out to help. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. But Jimmy, what's your number one favorite moment of the episode?
Probably Joel's attack on the Fedra guy, because it really lets us know like this guy is not to be trifled with. Obviously, the flashback with Sarah and why he attacked that guy. But I think that whole interaction where he's just beating that guy to hell and then obviously Ellie standing behind him, just watching it.
Taking notice in a way that where she's not horrified.
Right. She's almost into it, but kind of scared. But it just let the viewer know, those that haven't played the game, that this guy, I mean, he's a killer. What has he been doing for the last 20 years, right? And I think he just snapped. And it was Pedro Pascal absolutely killed it, for sure.
Yeah, that's a good answer. So my number one is Sarah's death. You know, that's a hard moment. If you've seen the game, it's a hard moment to fuck up because it's so cinematically done. Like, all you got to do is film it this way, which is basically what they did. But still, seeing it in live action like that with these faces that I already know and love made it just kind of hit differently. Mm-hmm. And again, I've got kids, so all that stuff combined was just like, it was profoundly affecting. And it's kind of that whole sequence, like Steve said, culminating in that moment that was like so well executed. But yeah, so that's my number one. Let's go through some bullets and pills.
Pills, baby.
We already talked about the whole truck scene. The camera movements and everything are literally shot for shot the game. But this is just little moments, little things from the game that we caught. We'll go around the room, just rapid fire. And anything that someone else calls that you wrote down, just go ahead and cross it off and go down to something else until we run out of stuff. How about that? Steve, I'll let you start.
I've also included little Easter eggs like, oh, there's a song that played, that kind of stuff like that, what we used to do for Stranger Things as well, if they popped up.
Sure.
And on top of that, Sarah was listening to Tomorrow by Avril Lavigne at the beginning of the game.
Is that what her, I wonder what her shirt was.
Yeah, I couldn't figure that either. It was driving me nuts.
Okay, I didn't catch what it was.
Guys, if you know what was on her shirt.
I only
shirt,
know two Avril Lavigne songs. Can you guess what they are?
Skater Boy
and Complicated, baby.
Complicated.
Why'd you have to go and make things so complicated?
And you fall, oh, and you fall. 2003. Like
good times. Jimmy.
I really like the backpacks. Like, obviously the set design stuff was incredible, but if you saw the little alien hanging from Ellie's backpack, it was straight from the game. Mm-hmm. I think just the style of the clothing that they were wearing was it's dead on.
To piggyback off Jimmy, there's a moment where Joel and Tess, as soon as they're alone and they're geared up, they come in. He slings his backpack off and kneels and starts to rifle through it. Mm. That is straight up from the game. Every time you went to check your backpack.
Making a bomb.
Yeah. Every time you went to go craft, you would do that exact motion. 100% intentional. I loved it. Steve.
There's a really hilarious Gore Lieberman t-shirt worn in the piece.
Yeah. Very true. Very true.
You guys remember Gore Lieberman?
Vaguely.
Al Gore and whatever Lieberman's first name is.
Yeah, Mr. Lieberman.
Fuck Joe Lieberman. That's his name. Joe Lieberman. Fuck Joe Lieberman.
Yeah, you had to say the fuck to remember it.
Yep.
Jimmy.
There's a scene where there's a guitar just sitting in the corner, and it kind of preludes to, you know, what Joel's about and some of the future things that happen in the game. So
Ellie's knife, the switchblade. That was very intentionally something that she's well known for throughout the first and second game. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Steve.
Marlene. The actress who plays Marlene is Meryl Dandridge. She also plays Marlene in the game. She is the only...
That's so cool. I didn't know that.
She's the only video game voice actor who is reprising their role in the show. Several of the other voice actors will be appearing in the show, but not as the characters they played in the game. So like
we've already seen them.
Because Troy Baker's going to be in the game.
Who voiced Joel in the game.
Ashley Johnson, who played Ellie, is going to be in the game. I'm hoping there's a theory as to who she's going to play, and I'm really excited to see if that's true or not. But yeah, so Meryl Dandridge reprising her role as Marlene in the show.
Very cool. Very cool. Jimmy.
The movie that she gives Joel, that also plays into like some of Joel's hobbies that you find out in the game. He's real big, like crappy movie buff. So that was a Curtis the Viper 2 and how excited he got over the movie.
So actually pretty cool. The poster for Curtis and the Viper 2 is on the wall in The Last of Us Part 2.
Oh, nice.
And Dina talks about it. Like she's like, oh, look at this movie. Like it's a thing. So very cool. I would say the Chuck Taylors that she's wearing. I know she's wearing black Chuck Taylors in the second game because that's what I'm actively playing. But I just, when I think of Ellie's costume, I always think of Chuck. It's a low hanging fruit, but I just liked that they made a point to focus. The first thing we saw was the Chuck Taylors, and I thought immediately.
There's a whole shot of her running, and they just focused on that.
Yeah.
Those Chucks, so.
My next one is literally pills, baby.
Why we call this segment what we do.
Yeah. So, there's a scene where, you know, we find out Joel is selling pills to Lee in the beginning. And that is because in the game, pills are a very important thing that you collect as you're going through the world. You can find these.
They're vitamins in the game.
Wink. there are these pills and you collect them. And what you do is it's like some type of currency. So it's like, oh, I have 25 pills on me. I can upgrade my ability to listen. So it just makes your character. It's a function in the game to upgrade your character stats. Like you can run faster. Your health is increased. You can craft things speed. Faster.
Yeah.
So that's why we call this segment pills, is because pills were such a big part of the game. And also I wanted to yell pills, baby.
Pills, baby.
Yeah.
Baby.
I had the next thing up was the line pills and bullets, bullets and pills. That was, it's such an important part of the universe. That's all you really need if you're going
to
survive.
Yeah, you need to find bullets and pills, baby.
Yeah. Just like real life.
Okay. Do you have any more, Chris?
Yes. So a couple of dumb ones, like obvious things like the ration cards, those are in the game, but I want to say the wardrobe that's covering the hole where he keeps like his secret stuff in his house, in the game, that's literally like the passageway that they take to sneak out of the city. It's like in their house, like there's a giant wardrobe that they move and it's a crack in the wall and that's how they get in and out to smuggle stuff. And I was expecting it to be that. And then when it was just a little hidey hole, I was like, huh, but I think it's a reference to that. So I put that in.
Nice.
I liked, the weapons that he pulls out are like actual weapons from the game. It's like a hatchet and another wrench. The guy's got so many wrenches. And then, his gun, even his gun case, that Magnum that he uses.
Yeah, that revolver.
Yeah, the revolver
was on my list. Yeah.
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 There's a shot. I think it's when I could be mistaken. I meant to write down where it was in the show, but I missed it. But there's a shot of just, I think it's supposed to be dust.
Yeah, the dust. It's right at when the wardrobe scene.
Yeah, so he moves a wardrobe and there's dust floating in the colored red room that they're in. And it's very evocative of the spores from the original game. That's how they looked in the
game. It's like the opening to the game. Like when you press start, it's like a windowsill in the dust.
Yeah.
Oh, true.
Yeah,
true.
That's probably the direct reference there is that.
I had a small one, the Firefly graffiti. And Ellie's like when she's locked up to the heater by the chain, it's like when you're lost in the darkness. There's a lot of Firefly graffiti.
There's so many
throughout the game.
They're
so
less of a militia and more of a Banksy.
Yeah.
they're painting that thing everywhere they can.
And I guess they got a stencil for the Firefly because otherwise you'd occasionally at least see one that's all shitty. What is that? they must have a stencil.
Yeah.
Jimmy,
I didn't have anything.
What about September 26th?
Oh yeah. That definitely was on there. That's actually Outbreak Day, or Last of Us Day, but Naughty Dog celebrates it every year by putting
I didn't know that
content. And, September 26th, every year they put out some cool stuff.
And that's the date in the game that it started too,
yep.
right?
September 26, 2013.
Speaking of Naughty Dog, the developer.
Is that the day it came out?
No.
That would have been money.
I bet they were probably shooting for that, but obviously this COVID and all that stuff probably pushing them back. But that would have been really baller if they dropped it on Outbreak.
Well, I mean, the original game. It's like you were playing it and it was like, today?
Wait, that's today. Speaking of Naughty Dog, Naughty Dog is the creator, the development studio behind The Last of Us. They are also behind the Uncharted games.
Mm. And did you get an Uncharted Easter egg?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It's Ellie's outfit. She's wearing the Nathan Drake shirt.
Oh, wow.
Oh, well, she is, isn't she? Yep. The baseball tee?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Nice.
Specifically, I think Drake wears that in the young Drake scenes when you play the game, whenever he's young.
You're talking about
Drake.
Tom Holland?
No, I am not talking about that abomination.
I wish they'd have made that a show. That would have been a cool show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Indiana Jones type show.
Mm-hmm. I didn't catch that.
Very good catch.
So that's my last one.
Yeah, that's it. I think the Stages of Infection poster is in the game on a wall. I remember seeing that. And again, like Jimmy kind of touched on it with his cachet of weapons, but I think the wrench that he hit the Nana with was a reference to the game.
There's other things that I caught too, people. But I don't want to talk about them because it alludes to other things.
Yeah, so this one thing is referenced at the end of the show. Yeah. okay, that brings us to our final segment, our Outbreak performance. Who are you going to give it to? Your favorite performance of the episode. Steve, take it away.
I am giving it to my favorite performance, which is Nico Parker as Sarah.
Very nice.
She was just incredible in the role. She was instantly likable. Just when she said, "I sell hardcore drugs," like her delivery was this perfect, like, oh, that's Sarah. That's the character. And her chemistry with not only Pedro Pascal, but Gabriel Luna as Tommy was just so great. You really believe that, you know, this is a family and they really love each other. And when she got shot at the end and she's doing that, like, really quick gasping for breath, like, oh my gosh, it's just awful to listen to. And then when you hear that stop and you just know that character has died, it's just so sad. And she crushes it. And just for being a character that isn't in, obviously she's dead, she's not going to be around anymore, she leaves a huge lasting impression, which is important because that is Joel's entire motivation for the whole story, is his relationship with his daughter and the fact that he could not save her. And Nico Parker just crushed it. And as an audience, because of her performance, we also understand Joel's pain.
We felt the pain.
Mm. Yeah. Nico Parker was my pick too.
Mine as well.
I think is for being in the show for all of what, 30 minutes. I mean, she's probably the most memorable character, especially in that episode, obviously. But effect that she left on me as a viewer, just from a very short performance, just absolutely killed it. Like, you felt everything when, like you were saying, when she was laying on the ground dying, and when Joel goes to grab her and the pain like that shoots out, like I just shut up and I was like, oh my gosh, she's absolutely killed it.
Yeah. I, nothing more to say on the subject. I really wanted to not start a 9-episode pattern of Bella Ramsey, right? which is tempting, but I think Nico very much deserves the Streamy Award in this episode, just because her performance is so small, but so important. It's the driving impetus for, you know, arguably the protagonist, at least of this storyline, right? Like it's the motivation for why Joel is the way he is, why he does what he does, and like the spiritual reason of everything that happens in the story, in a sense, right? The backbone of the most important relationship in the show. Yeah, I think that she had a lot of pressure with that, and blew my expectations out of the water, like just absolutely crushed it, like you guys said. So that ends our coverage of The Last of Us.
We do have some questions.
Oh, that's right. We got questions on Last of Us.
These are
well.
Questions written in by our Patron members on Discord. Go on to patreon.com/streamingthings to become a patron. We have a couple questions. First up from Stanton, who, by the way, created our Last of Us cover art.
Fucking cool.
Which is rad.
We do say so ourselves.
Really
so
cool.
Yeah, so thank you, Stanton. It looks amazing. He writes, curious to know if the boys, us notice any standout moments paying homage to the video game medium slash mechanics. Joe hosting tests and pulling her up, stuff like that. I think you mentioned one earlier, Jimmy, when the little like pulling the backpack down and kneeling down. Like
yes, that is 100%. A mechanic. That's the only thing I like can
when
think they, of.
The flashlight, when he finally puts it up in his thing, we were all talking about that. Like, it's all wrong.
Yeah, because in the first game, they're strapped to your backpacks and you can just click them on with R3. Yeah,
he was holding it in his hand. We're like, that's not good.
That's not how it happens. Yeah. But then they started climbing the ladder and they put it on the backpack. We're like, okay, right. You saved the show.
Woo, I almost turned it off.
Yeah.
Almost powered it off. Stanton continues, does it feel like the COVID pandemic changed the way the initial outbreak was portrayed? Well, I don't think the initial outbreak was portrayed differently, but I do think that first scene, the scene that takes place in the 60s on the TV show, that felt almost like it was written to be like, hey guys, this isn't like a COVID pandemic. This is a fungal thing, totally different.
Yeah.
Sure. I could see that. I think my answer was going to be no, but I think that the way that we view this story is drastically changed having gone through the COVID pandemic. Mm-hmm. If anything, it makes it more real. You know, we've already seen like how people react and how quickly things can go and how the lack of toilet paper, things
how
like that.
How quick do you think toilet paper went during this outbreak?
It's hard to say, but I think that's pretty fast.
Rations are on.
Yeah.
They just write five on there. Like, here you go.
It's just sheets. That's all you get.
I want five sheets, please. Our next question comes in from Ruben. Ruben asks, just in case you guys didn't know, the prosthetic legend Barry Gower, who made the Game of Thrones Night King, the terrifying Vecna from Stranger Things, and so much more, is the one in charge of the infected for the show.
Good to know.
How impressed were you guys with his work in what we got on the first episode?
Well, we haven't really seen it yet.
Yeah, there's not a lot we've seen.
We did see that wall piece was really good.
Oh, it's great.
But we haven't seen
this
any
wall
active
piece. A nice wall clicker really brings the room together.
It ties the room together.
Very
yeah.
feng shui.
It's
with
like the carpet. But I've seen still photos and a little bit of footage of the clickers, and it's terrifying. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's really excited me about the show is that there was little to no CGI. Obviously, the environment stuff is CGI, but
Just Boston.
All of the clickers and runners and everything. It's all played by real actors with prosthetics. So
yeah.
Hell yeah.
It's going to feel more tactile. Mm.
And the last question is also from Ruben. That last one wasn't so much a question, more so as a really an interesting point. Thank you for sending that in. But he asks, I really feel like the first game story should be split up into two seasons, mainly because of the known characters that were added for the show, as well as the added backstory to some of these known awesome characters, like Frank, for example. How do you feel about the first season supposedly being only the first game?
I love it.
Game one season.
I'm so happy. I remember calling Jimmy and Andy and saying, God, I hope they tell the whole game in the first season. And Jimmy was like, I think they are, because in the trailer we see snow. And if you played the game, that's indicative of toward the end of the game. But the reason is, and I didn't want them to stretch it out so much that they lose the pacing of the story, or stretch it out so much that they get time to wander a la Game of Thrones and kind of damper things a bit. Mm-hmm. The entire first game only takes 15 hours to play through if you suck.
Right.
And that's wandering, looking around, getting lost, trying over and over to, you know, dying on the same scene and trying again. And so to tell the story in a visual way, you know, should be less than that. Theoretically, it would take 9 to 10 hours. Boom. That's how long they're using. Right. So I'm very happy to hear that. I disagree. I think it should be one season personally, but Steve, what about you?
No, I agree completely. Like this is a story that so many people already know and that's already out there, especially since it seems like they're following the show as closely as they are, or they're following the game as closely as they are.
Yeah.
So it would, I feel like they would be doing themselves a disservice if they were to split it up that way. Not only because I think you're right, Chris, the pacing would be off, but also like if you get to like a certain part in the game, like a halfway point, and then people are like, well, I'll just go play the game.
Right.
And then when season two comes out, it's like, all right.
Yeah, and there was no point I could think of to end a season in the middle of that story that wouldn't piss me off and have to wait to have to wait a year and a half or so, right?
Right.
So yeah, I'm really happy about that. I'm really happy about that.
And that was our last question.
That brings our coverage this week to a close. Tune in next Monday for our coverage on episode 2 and so on and so forth throughout the Last of Us season. We're also finishing our Harry Potter marathon. So Deathly Hallows Part 1 will drop on Wednesday, and we'll get Deathly Hallows Part 2 out as soon as humanly possible to end up that series. I said it on our Harry Potter show, so you'll hear that in a couple of days. We're tempted to maybe cover Yellow Jackets in the coming months when Last of Us ends. That might be the future of the show if you're into that. Always feel free to write into streamingthingspod@gmail.com with any of your thoughts on the show. We will do our best to get back to you via email, but the three of us monitoring that, things go haywire all the time. I'm on Instagram at Movies Are Therapy. You can DM me there. I'm pretty good about answering those. We're all on Twitter. You can please rate and review the show if you never have done so before on Spotify or iTunes or wherever you're listening to this. That helps bump us up in the algorithm. I'm sure there's a couple dozen Last of Us podcasts that are going to drop today. We want to be up toward the top of that. That'd be wonderful if you could help us do that. Share it around. Help us out. And then, yes, like Steve said, patreon.com/streamingthings. You can support the show financially and get some different rewards, extra episodes, an ability to be on the show, all kinds of stuff on there.
We're doing a apocalypse-themed poll on Patreon right now in honor of The Last of Us.
Yeah.
Apocalyptic show. By the end of the week, the poll ends. You can choose between The Book of Eli, Mad Max Fury Road, Death Race 2000, Children of Men. One of those four movies will win and will become our exclusive Patreon bonus episode. So if you're interested in that, check us out.
Thank you so much to Jimmy. Yay. Friend of the show, friend of my life, for joining the show again with your plethora of Last of Us knowledge. Annie Hoozle, that's all the time we have for right now. My name is Chris.
I'm Steve.
I'm Jimmy.
And this was Streaming Things. Happy streaming. This month, we got some new patrons to thank. We are so thankful, so grateful to all of you who throw your hard-earned monies our way. Money. We got the new Try Before You Deny producers, Jose Ruben Cruz Rodriguez and Rabbit Dog in a Barbie Car. That is actually their Christian name.
I can't imagine does that fit on a library card?
Rabbit Dog in a Barbie Car. Yes, because in a Barbie Car is put as a last name. So
okay, what's the middle initial? I thought N was the middle initial.
No, you're right.
I thought it was like Rabbit Dog N.
I don't think in that part of the world wherein Rabbit Dog hails, there is a middle name.
They're on Mountain Time.
Yeah, yes, for sure. In the Marty B VIP producers category, we've added Node KS, Charlie Friday. That's not real. It might be. That's awesome. You were named after a secret agent, and I love it. Heather Joe, Sheila Huff. I'm so sorry in advance. I'm going to try my best. Niamh McDyer and Micah Tybee.
I was reading that one before.
Ethan Gregory.
I got that one.
Casey McNatt, Nicole Herring, and Daisy JT. And in the chocolate pudding producers, we've added Meddler on the Roof, love it, Lane Crawford, Christiana Saya, Blaze King, Ellie Montiranta, Randy F, Carrie Gerard, Tyler Sowers, Cadet, Alyssa Anderson, Sabra Watkins, Jade Spade Marmalade, and Naris Martinez. And in the Friends Don't Lie producers, we've added Mike and Sheila. And I, again, apologize to anyone whose name I did not pronounce correctly. I did my best. My heart was in it.
I feel like you
Mike's going to be like, it's McKay.
It could be. Thank you all so much. We love you.
Boing.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.